This is Report to Wyoming.
I'm Colby Fedor, and today I was delighted to talk to Christy Jindrick-Toll. She and her husband, Corey, along with their friend, Heather Hintz, recently opened the Mental Health Hub in Casper. It's located at 701 Antler Drive. In this episode, we get to know Christy a little bit more and her vision for this building. We also talk about mental health in general, especially as it pertains to Wyoming and the holidays. I hope you enjoy it. My first question is, tell me about yourself. How did you end up in the mental health field?
I actually have kind of a funny background. I was in retail management going through school. So I was in a people field pretty much my whole life. Knew I was pretty good with people. And so as I went to, I decided to go back and do a master's graduate program for counseling.
Oh, where did you get your master's degree?
Okay, so I graduated from the University of Wyoming. It was the Casper cohort that they used to do here. So I wasn't in Laramie. It was actually here in town in 2008.
Oh, I want to interject because that's pretty cool. They do so much with the University of Wyoming that people don't always know about. And so for people thinking about going and pursuing a degree or expanding their education, they can do a lot right here in Casper. You don't have to be in Laramie.
Yeah, and that program is actually, so it went away for a couple of years just because they couldn't get anybody up here to do the instructing, but now it's back in full force. So that it's a three-year-long program through the University of Wyoming for specifically counselor education is what it's called.
Okay, and I know there's some scholarships for students who want to get into the mental health, would you say industry or field?
I would say field.
Okay. I always want to make sure I'm... Industry sounds weird when it comes to mental health, I think.
Right.
Because it's like capitalizing on it, but you have to make money. It's a very important job. You recently opened the Mental Health Hub. I know it's been a long time coming. How are things going?
It has been literally a dream come true. So I've had this kind of vision, this dream for probably... about 10 years, I would think. Decided to go into private practice around the same time, about 10 years ago. And it was kind of a daunting, isolated. I felt pretty alone in trying to kind of work as a mental health professional and really counsel people. You need that. So I think people forget that we're human too, and we need that support. And how about I share this? I think sometimes, you know, imagine when you have friends or family members that reach out to you when a crisis is happening, and you know how draining and kind of how exhausting that feels, just showing up for them, being there for them. Yeah. Often we like have to just listen and we don't know what to say. Although we have training and education, we're still human. And so imagine having that 8 times a day. Like these are 8 different crises in different people's lives that we have to shoulder, and it's a lot of weight.
And you don't, it doesn't leave the room. So right. You just absorb everything and that's it.
Absolutely. So that's kind of what the Mental Health Hub was, the dream was I was like, how do we get to be professionals and have our own private practices and be able to have the autonomy and the independence of that, right? So like we get to make our own schedules, all of these great things that come from being a business owner. But then also be in a place that we can feel like we are supported, that we can check in with each other, that we can continue to get training, remain ethical, all of those really big, important things that we all need to do.
And it's a huge building for people who don't know or haven't read about it. Maybe we should go into the history of the building really quickly because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, the building is pretty awesome. So I actually came upon it by accident. We were looking in that general neighborhood for a different building that my husband owns a couple other businesses. And so we were going to see that other building and I drove by and I've lived here almost my whole life and I didn't even know that it was there. And so I kind of peeked around and it was completely covered and overgrown. You couldn't even see the entrance and it had so many trees. And I thought, what is this place? It kind of called to me, I'll be honest. There was a little bit of magic there. I just literally was like, hey, stop. Like, I have to go check this building out. So I went in and I'm looking in the windows like, you know, this funny person that I'm sure they're like, who is this person looking in this windows? And I looked in the windows and I immediately was like, oh my gosh, like this, I have to have this place. I have to get inside this place. So what the cool part was is that as I was, I called my real estate agent, who's a friend of mine actually, and I was like, hey, you have to let me into this place. Can I get an appointment? Can I get in here? And she said, oh my gosh, it's crazy. I am driving by as we speak. So let me get permission. Let me see if I can get you in there. I'm on my way. So she came over. She was able to let me in the building. I walked into the lobby, and I immediately saw, like, my vision in front of me. So it was... The whole experience has been kind of surreal because it started out as that. I wasn't actually in the process of trying to make the mental health hub exist. I didn't even know that it was going to be called the mental health hub. I had no idea that I was even going to find that building. And now we come almost a full year. It's almost been a full year now.
Oh, wow.
I closed. So let me give you some history of the building like you were asking for. So, We heard the history was that Serge Dahlia, actually, who is a community member, a longtime community member here in town, actually built the building back in the 70s. And let me tell you that it was very 70-ish. It had blue, crazy baby blue everything. There were these tropical silver and gold wallpaper prints that were kind of crazy.
And was this a petroleum building? What was the business?
It was for oil and gas. Yep.
And there was a bar in one of the bathrooms,
yes,
I think.
Yes, there was a bar.
Oh,
there was a jacuzzi.
Gosh, how did people get anything done? What was getting done?
We've named, and since then we kind of have nicknamed all of these rooms and stuff. So we imagine that there were probably some pretty awesome parties at the time, I would say, after office hour parties. There was like mirror ceiling tiles. There was... an underground safe. There was some pretty... We found some treasures in this building. It's been kind of a cool process.
I know there's little remnants of it. Some of the tile in the bathrooms, mm-hmm, downstairs, I think, I saw. Okay, little cool things. And then what about that rug?
Yeah. So I guess Serge commissioned. And so, of course, I would love to speak with him. I have not spoken with him to see what the truth of these stories were. But supposedly he had commissioned this amazing place in New York City to do this ginormous rug. So when you walk into the lobby, there's this huge wall. I would say it's about 30 feet by 40 feet. And it was covered with this... Probably back in the day, it was probably pretty awesome. But mm-hmm, nowadays, it's very retro, let's say that. It was the colors of the oil field. It was supposed to look like the oil field and the layers of the earth. So it was like yellows, oranges, browns. But that's the colors of it. And it was this ginormous, it fit on that 30 by 40 foot wall. And so we traced it back. It was really funny, actually. It became a joke because my husband... was like, I bet it's like worth some money. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to do some research. And so we actually found a number on the back. There was a full, it had its own serial number. It had been, we like had the commission date and all of that. And so he called that company and they said, that was actually a really, probably really expensive piece to have made. And it's so cool that you're calling us back. But it had been sitting there on the wall. Nobody wanted to touch it. People had joked with me about keeping it. And I was like, yeah, no, thank you. Back in the day, it was beautiful, but I didn't necessarily still want it on the wall. And so we were actually able to, several months later, we put it into an auction in L.A. So we actually had it driven out to L.A.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that.
Yes. Like, this is a new piece. Yeah. And so we were pretty excited to see. So we did. It did auction off. I have no idea who the person was. They took a piece of it. But we did get $5,000 for it. So,
wow. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love stories like that. And so let's give people a general sense of how big this is. How many rooms are there for practicing in?
Okay, so we have 26 current suites, but each of the suites have several different office options, you know. So I wanted to make sure to have – there are some people that, like, do different types of therapies, and so they want, like, their own little lobby and maybe a desk space. Some people are play therapists who work with kids primarily, and so they want a place where you can sit and do therapy but then also have, like, a playroom for play therapy. So I wanted to give lots of different options, and also for people who maybe a lot of times there's, you know, a smaller private practice, so there'll be a couple of clinicians. And so those people like to have their own room, maybe a lobby that they can share. So really what we did was we kind of broke down all of the suites and made sure that we had a little bit of every size. So in the 26 suites, we have one that has five offices. That one is actually still available. I'm excited to say, though, after a year, we have all of the rest are rented out.
Wow.
We have officially rented out. Yep. All other 25 suites.
Wow.
And we have about... And we also take students, interns, provisional license people. So a lot of us have those people that are working in our offices as well and sharing offices. So I think we have probably, I should have done a count before I came, but I would say probably 20, 25, 26, 27 actual clinicians.
That is incredible. So what's unique about the way you've decided to pull this team of professionals together under one roof to meet a whole range of needs?
So one of the things that usually happens, especially when you have like a mental health agency, is that it's either a nonprofit, which I have worked for nonprofits, and bless all of their souls, that is hard work to have to chase money, to find money, to do the work. It's necessary, and it is so amazing, and I appreciate it, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do. Another option is to have like a business or me be an employer, right? Like where I would be a director and there would be all of these people that would work underneath me. I actually love to be a leader, but I don't like to be a boss and a manager. And so the idea of that is just overwhelming to me. And going into private practice 10 years ago, I fell in love with the independence. I fell in love with the schedule. I fell in love with being able to kind of pick and choose my own clients. And so I wanted that to happen for other people as well, and to let people know that there was this option where they could kind of have their cake and eat it too. They could be their own business, but also have that support and collaboration of other people. As far as I know, I've heard it, like maybe there are versions of this, but this particular... Gosh, I don't even know what you would want to call it. It's kind of a new way. It was pretty much out of, I don't want to be the big boss. I don't want a nonprofit. I don't want to be in charge of all of those people, but I want to create this amazing place where people can feel like they can do their best work. One of the things that I always like to talk about is that what people don't know is that the average shelf life is what we call it for a therapist is 7 years. So we have to go, in order to be a therapist, you have to have a master's degree at the minimum. Mm. And so you are literally going through associate's degree, bachelor's degree, master's degree. Most times the graduate school is about 3 to 4 years. So you're looking at 7 to 8 years of schooling, student loans, all of that good stuff. And I think sometimes people don't realize that it's very similar to the medical field, other medical professions. They have like doctors have, for instance, like residents and people like that. And so we do that too. We have to have, once you graduate, you actually get a provisional license, and then you have to work for so many hours. Usually it takes about 2 to 3 years under somebody else, and that's out of school. Mm-hmm. Just to make sure. And that, I'm glad they do that, right? Like these are people that are working with minds and people's emotions and people's families and people's relationships. So they better be top notch. But I don't think people realize how much school it is and how long it takes. And so what's crazy about a 7-year shelf life is that that's how long we usually go to school for. And then after that, we only, on average, due to burnout, last 7 years after we get out of school.
Oh my goodness. The interns that you take on, does this kind of help offset costs for people who might not have insurance or be able to afford mental health care?
Yes. And so my favorite part about being a supervisor, and it's something that I love, is that I am able to give back to the community so that they can give free, while they're practicing, while they're learning, they can give free therapy for people that, you know, are underinsured or don't have insurance. And it is a win-win for everybody. So they're getting the practice. I'm able to provide that space for them, and clients are getting counseling for free.
I think most of us know about maybe one or two types of therapy. What's the range that you guys offer?
Oh my gosh. That's been kind of a really cool part of this too, is, you know, we joke about the old movie that was like, if you build it, they will come. And it has attracted a lot of different types. So we're all very, obviously giving, caring, nurturing people, but we all have our own specialties. Heather, who is kind of the brains of this operation, she actually created our website. And the website, if you go to the directory, you can look at what's there and what everybody, she did a great job because it has little icons to represent what populations the therapist will see, but also what their training and what their expertise is. And one of my favorite pieces about that is it'll say, like, for instance, experiential therapy. That's something that I do. If you don't know what experiential therapy is, you can actually click on that link, and it'll take you to an article that kind of explains what that is. So we have everything from, and I kind of do a funny one. It's called sand tray therapy. And so literally it's play therapy with, it doesn't have to be with kids. It's with adults. So we use a giant, people make fun of me a lot. They say it's a big sandbox, but we literally get to play with the sand and have all of these figures. And it's kind of using the other type of your brain to have a, different way of processing what's going on in your life. And so a lot of times we have that very formal, logical side of our brain. We also have to mirror and have that very expressive, emotional, artistic side of our brain. And when we have those two things that kind of mirror each other really well, that's when we do well in life. Mm-hmm. And so it's giving people that, you know, we forget to play. I think, like, about 12 years old, our breathing changes, right? We start to stress out. We get thrown in the real world. And so our breathing changes all the way to how our brain changes, as well as what we expect of other, you know, what we think other people expect from us. And so we stop using that play, but that piece is so important. So a lot of us do that experiential therapy. There's lots of play therapy. We actually have somebody who does, like, gaming. They use electronics, gaming, video gaming, which is very cool right now. And so he uses that. We also have, there's a traditional model, cognitive behavioral, which is traditional talk therapy. We have lots and lots of us are certified in EMDR, which is also kind of a hot topic right now. I don't know if you're familiar with.
Is this using lights?
You can use, it's bilateral stimulation. So you, it's that back and forth between those two brain hemispheres. So sometimes it's lights that you can watch. Sometimes people will use, you know, you'll follow a finger with your eyes and you'll go back and forth between left and right as you're processing things. Mm-hmm. We also have little tappers that will, like, vibrate. And so that'll go left, right, left, right. Right now, I kind of notice on TikTok, it's kind of the place where everybody's getting their mental health fix. They're doing a lot of bilateral music. And so all of that stuff is really, really good. And the neuroscience behind that is my favorite part, because it's kind of, before we used to think it was just kind of magic hocus pocusy therapy, we are figuring out that there is actual science behind it and all this research that's backing this up. So EMDR is what they call, it's eye movement desensitization, and literally it just goes between left brain, right brain, using that as a therapy approach while you're processing trauma. So people are certified in that as well.
Oh my goodness. Is there a population that you see maybe more of than others?
I think that the stigma around mental health in the past it's always been, I mean, usually parents bring a lot of times kids to come in. I would say, though, that more and more, and I'm really excited about that, the more that it is on TikTok, the more that it is on Instagram and all of those things, people are realizing that mental health is a human experience. Mm. We all have mental health issues. And I think that it used to be thought of as such this horrible, awful thing. And now that it's being okay, I'll share with you really quick, too. I actually had a couple of people tell me, even professionals in the field say, don't name it the mental health hub. Nobody will come if it's a mental health hub because of that stigma. And I purposely chose to name it the mental health hub because I don't want there to be a stigma. I want it to be
supposed to be like healing hearts.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, no, because what's wrong with that? Like,
sorry if your business is named Healing Hearts.
I wanted people to be able to go, I'm just going to go down to the hub, and it's a mental health hub, and it's just normal, and it's everyday talk, and it's not this huge, scary, big thing that it's often made in the past to be.
I had my first panic attack at 30, and I feel like panic attacks are probably one of those things where people talk about them, and you're like, is that even real? Are you just saying that? And then you have one, and then it just keeps happening. And I think I have them under lockdown now. But no, I was like, oh, that's what it is. I'm not having a heart attack. I realized, oh, there's some things going on in my life maybe I should dial back on. And so that was one. But I think it makes me realize, like, oh, my gosh, I wonder if my mom's generation and all her sisters, none of them went to therapy as far as I know. And
yep.
I wonder what they were doing. My mom was just really the type of lady who did not talk about it. She had her coping mechanisms and she moved on. I do think there is something to be said about that kind of toughness and fortitude, but I also think it's okay to talk about it or even to be able to tell like their neighbors or friends, like, I am really struggling with depression and it's okay. I wish it could be a little bit more casual and that people didn't feel like there was necessarily something wrong with them. It's just that we're human and everybody goes through difficult times.
And I think it's important to realize that therapists, we have mental health issues too. Like mm-hmm. we're trying to deal with all of that stuff. We're human as well. And I think sometimes, especially in the medical field, because we're kind of like in the medical field, but not like considered always medical field, that people think like, you know, like we're the experts or we know better or we have these perfect lives. Oh, my lordy. We, especially in Wyoming, it's really hard. As therapists, it's hard to find therapists for us. Mm. A lot of times, I know actually people who will go out of town or to get services because otherwise these are all our colleagues and our people that we know. So even that, panic attacks is like my middle name. So I get it. It's real. It's been nice to see the older generations, like the boomer generation is starting to come in. We have people who work with vets. We have a lot of people that work with individuals that have disabilities. So we pretty much kind of have every service that you possibly would want. And that's kind of the dream that's come true too, is that you get to walk in there and you have options. And I think that's really important when it comes to finding the right person.
Okay, so as we start to enter the holidays. Well, they're here. The holidays are here. And I think it's easy to get really caught up in the lights and all the food and the partying, but it can still be really stressful. Mm-hmm. And for some people, you know, if you don't have enough money to buy gifts for your kids or you just lost a spouse or whatever it is, there's some unique challenges about the holidays that we don't always think about. So what are some things, some practical advice that you give people to get through their day-to-day lives, especially during these seasonal times?
Yeah, because, and one of the things that I think we forget about, especially with the holidays, is that it triggers a lot of grief, right? There's a lot of loss, there's a lot of grief around the holidays with either people that aren't spending time with us there anymore, that they're not there. Maybe there's some stuff that happens within families and you can't get together with families anymore. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of loss. And it's hard because, like you said, we get wrapped up in all of the pretty lights and the Christmas carols. But I would say, and as a matter of fact, I think my colleagues could agree with me, this is our hardest time of the year.
Oh, wow.
We have the most people that come in are like, and a lot of my clients are on, essentially we do plans of how are we going to get through the holidays. Mm. And that's a different way of looking at it. Here's kind of my thoughts about it, is that it's to just be real and honest about it. We don't have to put that fake smile. Like one of my most favorite things, I don't know if you've seen it, is there's like a picture, it's been on sweatshirts, there's a meme on it, is there's a picture of like Christmas lights and they're all like knotted up. And it says, I'm okay, I'm really okay. But it's this giant, enormous knot of Christmas lights. And I think that there is this idea that we have to be happy for other people or we have to go, oh yes, Merry Christmas. And I call it teething, where you just teeth, you show your teeth as you smile.
Oh yeah.
And like, yeah, like, ah, oh yeah, Merry Christmas to you too. And I think it's okay to go, yeah, I'm not doing okay. And this is really hard for me. The hard part about that is that those of us that receive those messages need to not feel like we have to fix that. Like we don't have to go, oh my gosh, I'm so, you know, like, what can I do to help you? Sometimes it's just to have some empathy and say, yeah, this kind of sucks. I bet this sucks for you. Or, wow, this is really rough. Mm-hmm. What are you doing to get through this? So to me, it's about having honest conversations and not pretending. And I know you had mentioned Wyoming. I think we tend to do that a lot here, especially with the cowboy up idea and the like, we're just going to survive through this and we're kind of harder people by nature. I think it's important to have those real honest conversations. And if you're having those honest conversations and you reach out and you say something that you're not doing well and that person doesn't know what to say or what to do, to not take that personally and just say, okay, and I need to find my people, right? And I think that's the biggest piece too, is not only being honest, but it's finding people that you can connect with, that you, and they're out there. There might be, they might feel like they're not, and they're sometimes few and far between, but they're out there, and to just kind of keep going until you find the people. And all it takes, I always say that there's the two most powerful words in the dictionary is me too. Me too. It has a lot of power. And I think that when somebody just goes, yeah, I get it, or wow, gosh, that sucks. I don't even know what to say. And those are absolutely appropriate answers, right? It's just saying, I get you. I'm right here with you, and it's okay to not be okay.
It definitely makes me personally want, for me and my kids, to think about others more and people who might need a warm coat, people who might need a hug, or just an ear. So what is the best place for people to get in touch with you if they'd like to explore some mental health options?
I would say the website's probably the easiest, especially if you're already kind of, because it's scary to go to therapy. It is scary. I'm a therapist, and it's scary to go to therapy. So I think the website is a really great way to kind of keep some distance, but be able to see what's out there. And it's a really good one where you can, so if you find somebody that you think you'll connect with or you like what they offer, you can actually just push it and it'll directly get you to them, whether that's a phone number, email, whatever that is. Or we do have a phone number that you can call, which is also on the website.
Quick interjection. Listeners, it's 307-374-MIND. That's 307-374-6463.
And actually, I'm usually one of the people, or my colleague Heather that's helping with this, will be the ones that answer and get back to you. And that's another thing, too, is we try to really do a really, because we have so many clinicians to choose from, we try to do a really good job with matching. So we're not just like a, like if we do a referral, we're not just going, okay, next, and just giving it to the next person in line. We ask a lot of questions. We're like, do you want a female or a male? Do you like someone who's more direct, or do you like someone who's just going to listen and just be there with you? Do you, you know, what's your insurance? How do you want to pay? What does that look like? Is that hard for you? And then that might be where we can help have the students come in and do something like that. So we really try to match people really well with somebody. And so if that's a better way that you'd rather call and have a conversation with us and try to get you to the right person, we can do that too.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.